come to order. This is the Senate State Affairs Committee, first meeting of the new legislature. It is January 20th, approximately 3:34 in the afternoon. Members who are present at this time, Senators Elton, Senator Wagner, myself, Senator Terrio, Senator Huggins, and Senator Davis. We only have one bill scheduled for a hearing today. That is legislation that I have sponsored, Senate Bill 36. I had Senate Bill 36 drafted and introduced due to an issue that came to light during the most recent general election, and that was with regards to the way that absentee ballot requests were being handled. It came to light that there's certainly been an increase in the number of groups that are encouraging people to avail themselves of the absentee ballot process, and a number of groups have put together different request forms in order to encourage that. What caught the number of people off guard this year is a request form that had a return address of an entity other than the Division of Elections. So there was an intermediary, and when an individual Alaskan voter filled out their form, sent it, dropped it in the mailbox, many of them, I believe, unknowingly directed that request to an independent entity, not the Division of Elections, without thinking about the sensitive data that is contained on the form. And I just felt that was inappropriate. We've asked the drafter in our legislative legal department to come up with suggested wording on how to place something in the statutes to make it clear that that type of intermediary handling of the ballot request is not to continue in the future. And in addition, we have language in the proposed piece of legislation here that puts political parties in particular on notice that they may not encourage or assist in this type of activity in the future. So with that, I've asked Ms. Laura Glazer from the Division of Elections to be here today to sort of run us through sort of what led up to the particular case in the general election. Also let us know of any other problems that we might want to consider before this piece of legislation passes. It's not my intent to have the committee take final action on this bill today. The governor had a separate piece of legislation, Senate Bill 66, read into the legislative system a couple of days ago. It also deals with this issue and other election-related issues. The one thing that that piece of legislation contains that I would like the committee to consider amending into Senate Bill 36 is a consequences portion. They have suggested that statutes be amended so that there is a consequence added to AS 1556-60 that would say that it is a person who commits a crime of unlawful interference with an election if the person, and we would add this type of adding intermediate handling of absentee ballot requests to that list. And I'd like to have some discussion on that today in consideration about possibly adding that to the piece of legislation. So with that, unless there are questions of committee members, we'll have Ms. Glazer come forward. Please.
Mr. Chairman, Laura Glazer, Director, Division of Elections. I don't know whether you want to ask me questions, whether you would just want to talk about what happened this year, the record interest and absentee, kind of some history. Let me know.
Give us a little bit of history. I know there's been a tremendous growth in the number of absentee ballot requests in general, and that's been across the nation, not just
across the nation, yes.
And go into the specific circumstances.
In our state, the first party to print their own absentee ballot request was the Republican Party. They did that in the primary. The chairman contacted me and asked, you know, could I configure it this way? Could I leave this section off? Can I put this on? And you know, we tangled well. And I said, no, you got to stick to the state form. And so you would see, if you see, I brought copies of the different types of forms, the Republican form, the state form, the form used by the Knowles campaign and the forms used by the Democratic Party. But the Republican Party was the first one out of the barrel in the primary. You'd have to ask the chairman, but I think that he said they sent out approximately 90,000 statewide. Their form was very similar in print and font and everything to the state form, but parts were filled out for the voter, their name in bold print, their residence address, their mailing address. Oftentimes the gender in the primary mailer, it was marked absentee ballots for all elections. And then it left for the voter to fill out where would they like the ballot mailed to, and of course to sign it. And then the Republican form folded up. A voter would have to fold it up, staple it, or tape it closed. And it was a pre-addressed to the Division of Elections. That was the first form not state-generated in, you know, this election cycle. The next group to interact with the Division of Elections was the Knowles campaign. And they proposed a form, and we counter-proposed. I have copies. It's much smaller.
Why don't you handle that as you're referring to them?
I don't know that they're all in the right order, and I... The Knowles one is easy to spot because it looks like a full page, and there's a disclaimer in dark here, paid for by Tony Knowles for U.S. Senate, and the address. This form also was directed back to the Division of Elections. It did not go to another intermediary source. We had some concerns about this form and expressed them, but it wasn't changed before it went out. When it said you must provide at least one of the following, and it was also left off the Democrat form, the Alaska voter number was left off. For us, the reason we think that's important is especially on an open-face form like the Democrat form, if that's being mailed, that's the least person's least able to see somebody's identity from a voter ID number. It's not your Social Security number. It's not your driver's license number coupled with a signature. It's less dangerous. That was left off. But this allowed the voter to fill it out. The Knowles form allowed the voter to fill it all out. It was not pre-filled, or any copies that we saw did not appear to be pre-printed at all by the Knowles campaign. I don't know in timing, because nobody has to check with us now, whether the next form was the Republican form, because the Republicans sent out another mailer to those who did not. They tracked who got an absentee. Anybody can do that request from the division who sought an absentee request. You'd have to ask the party chairman. My understanding is they tracked and sent an additional mailing for the general. You have a copy of the lieutenant governor's form that was sent, generated by the Republican Party. These copies were made for a press conference that the lieutenant governor and I were present for around October 12th when this all kind of blew up in our face. What we found next was the Democrat form, which came in two sections. It was actually a threefold mailer that came to voters. This was the cover. It opened up, and you had two forms. And you have copies where I've blocked out people's information. And what was the first flag for us was the one that says, here is your voter registration and absentee request form. It was pre-printed. And it was pre-printed in some cases with a P.O. box. And there's nowhere on here for a residence address. And a residence address is required by state law. We cannot process an application without your residence address. That's part of what makes you who you are, I mean, in the voter system. So that was our first, as the division's concern, is there are voters who would fill this out, and we needed to make a follow-up contact with that voter. And then, of course, the other key, I believe your copies show this too, was that they were They were open-faced, so there's a signature and all of your data here. In addition, it was mailed to the ADP, which is the Alaska Democratic Party. It did not come to the Division of Elections. So the first way we found out about this was internally, several people that work for the division got this, and one of their concerns was it went to a P.O. box, and they freaked out because they know it has to have a residence address in addition to a mailing address. And then the second was it's going back to a party. Then the next, you know, in a timeline is we started receiving these in postage paid envelopes provided by the state to registrars from the party. So these had been, and I can't speak to what the party did, but the party started mailing them back to us in our pre-addressed envelopes to Region 2, our Anchorage office, who then had to date stamp them because that's the process, and then DHL them to us. Then they began showing up in boxes. So there was, when you talk about our ability to process, we had no way to anticipate what was coming because instead of coming in a normal mail day, they're starting to come in Xerox boxes. In addition, as they were date stamping in the Anchorage office, they started to note that when the voter signed it, it could be almost a month prior to our receipt. So it was in someone else's possession. Either somebody had these out gathering signatures and then took them to the party, or they were mailed to the party first. I can't speak to that, but I didn't get them. The Division of Elections, didn't receive them as soon as the voter thought probably they were being entered into our database. We sent out, we had the press conference in October. We sent out within 2 or 3 days priority mail to over 900 voters who filled out these forms that did not have residence addresses, a priority mailer to say, we don't have your residence address. We can't process your application and get you a ballot. You need to, A, contact us with your residence address, or, and on the back of the letter was an application for a bifax ballot to help the people get through the process. We had both happen. We had people call. We had people fax their application back in. We had people request fax. I mean, so that was occurring at that time. I think that's pretty much a good timeline for you to ask further questions.
And there was an issue of there were stickers placed on some
Thank you. That was one of the reasons that we had the press conference, the Lieutenant Governor and I, was to show, and I don't have a sample here, but because there was no residence address, when we first raised the flag, I sent an email to the parties, not accusing one party or another, just saying there were voters that were concerned. The applications, obviously, this application says it's an official state application, but a voter looks at this one and they can see it's not right. So they're calling us first asking, is this really yours? And where's ADP? So we started answering those questions just process-wise till we started to realize what was missing here, that we had to also address that with them on residence. But we'd raised the issue to the party chairman that residence address was not provided. Then these applications started to appear with a pre-printed sticker on them, like a label that was probably computer-generated with a residence address added. And it was added after the voter signed it. We took, as the division, the stand that wasn't the voter's fault. While that had occurred after the voter had filled it out, we shouldn't punish the voter. We needed to get them processed. We went ahead and processed them. The only time the 900 voters that were contacted, it was incomplete. So we had to interface with the voter. We had to tell them, you don't have a complete form. What can we do to help you?
So what did the Department of Law say as far as, you know, the document filled out by the voter somehow being modified in transit?
Well, that it was wrong.
You did not want to disenfranchise the voter.
Right, and the Department of Law agreed. I mean, yes, it's wrong, but the point was, you have voters, it's October 12th, last day to request an application, Under current law, 7 days prior, which is something else I'd like to ask the committee to extend that time to 10 days, at least 10 days. But, you know, we need to keep this moving. We were, just so the committee knows, so the public knows, there were days when we got 7,000 in a day. There were a day when we got 11,000. We had, when a total of 58,000 application comes in, and there were days where there were 7 and 11,000, it was overwhelming to stay on that and look for an, I mean, and try and help the voter when the form wasn't complete for them.
Senator Wagner.
I just wonder, you know, in the paper a week or so ago, there was an article about 29,000 absentees didn't get sent back in or were unaccounted for. Would this have had something to do with that?
Certainly there were delays caused by this. I mean, I don't want to dump everything in one basket. The other thing, that it's not an easy process to explain or for accounting. The division had never been required to keep track of some of these things. We had record number of special advance ballots, which I don't know how much you all want to learn about elections, but we were up 1,300% in special advance ballots. And special advance ballot requests, which you can request when you request an absentee, means you actually get two ballots sent to you. You get one sent 60 days prior to an election, but you also get a second. So when I say I've mailed out 58,000 and only 29,000 come back, part of those are double. Part of those a person got two. So it's hard without us querying the database and really setting it up to basically defend ourselves to be able to explain that. You know, and I walked the reporter through that. I know it's difficult and people want to understand, and nobody wants to understand more than we do. I mean, I had to tell my staff to forgive themselves. I mean, they just beat themselves up. They worked. The election coordinator slept in her office. We were all on the phone. We'd pick up the phone in the middle of the night to reach the people overseas. I've never seen efforts like what our staff did. Temporaries, range eights, I had 17 people in the director's office all doing data entry to get these processed. But you're right, we didn't get everybody's application out. But there were some that just weren't completed. And the point is, when you get 7,000, you start going through, what can I fix? And you get the people through where everything is right, and then you go and you pick up all the things where if they weren't completely filled out, if they weren't, if they failed to sign it, if they failed to, so, you know, we did a kind of a triage.
This was a record turnout this year as far as number of votes cast.
Record turnout and absentee up, I think it's 87% from 0-0, so.
Whatever the total, you know, came from absentee ballot. Having people participate in the process is certainly a good thing, but you know, I just don't think that this particular process anticipated some of these steps, the volume, and then with this intermediate step, it distracted from your personnel's efforts to handle the volume that.
Well, to plan as managers as well, because when you're seeing mail come in, or if you have. And I don't know whether you all entertain this, that, you know, the forms are approved by the director. You know, if we're not going to require state forms, and I can understand why, that's fine, but that at least it's approved by the director, then at least we know, okay, a major presidential candidate or a U.S. Senate candidate or a party is going to do a mailer. You can at least prepare as a manager what's going to come in, and we'll ask the question. Are you going to pre-fill them in? I mean, the Republican Party pre-filled it in. That made data entry for us very easy. The cardstock wasn't shiny. That meant, you know, their eyes aren't straining. These were very small and handwritten and hard to read. That slows down data entry. I'm not, you know, we're not going to nitpick the heck out of people, but we'd like to help make it a good process for the voters, too. I mean, we didn't complain. You didn't hear from us in the press crying, but it made it more difficult. And we work, you know, years before I ever came to the division, these forms were developed, and they're developed for data entry purposes so that it makes sense. Again, you have range eights coming in, being trained. And this is one of the most important documents you fill out, is voter registration and an absentee ballot application. So it's in order for a reason, and these forms are not in similar order.
Now, another question then, Senator Hutton. The issue of whether the mail-in was a voter's registration or an absentee ballot request, was it only the one form that performed the double function?
Our state law says that when you request and this is our form, just so you know, this is the state form, it explains that when you request an application, you are updating your voter registration form simultaneously. Because of these headlines on the Democratic form, it says State of Alaska Voter Registration Application for Absentee. Okay, that is the Knowles form, and that's similar to an instruction for, again, if a voter's only reading this and not reading all their instructions, these two make more sense. On the Democratic one, it said this form is register new people in your neighborhood or a member of your family to register to vote. And then they had, in some cases, I'm sure they used their forms multiple ways, because we also saw some where they weren't pre-filled out. But the banner that says, here is your voter registration and absentee request form, that was the one that the ADP pre-filled in for the voter. So sorry I took too long to answer your question, but a voter registration application and absentee are simultaneous.
Well, I was puzzled to hear that there was questioning on some voters' parts that an absentee ballot showed up, and they said, I didn't request an absentee ballot, what's this about? And I think it was confusion that sprung from people that felt that they were filling out a voter
registration.
And the form actually performed both functions.
And we did have those calls as well. And that was, of course, part of our staff's frustration, was you hear people who say, I didn't want one, why'd I get one? And then you know there are people that wanted one and didn't get one. I mean, I guess that's the way things work in life, but it was really hard for us, because we certainly got calls from people who were concerned as well.
Senator Huggins?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Glaze, when you look at the aberrational forms that are different than the state forms, what sort of concerns did you have when you first saw the symptom that there was a different kind of form floating around?
Well, my first concern is it didn't come to us first. I mean, I have to be real honest. That made me nearly have a seizure, because that meant somebody's driver's license, Social Security number, phone and email, which that's the other thing on the Democratic. It says you must complete this section, which is phone and email. That's not required by state law. So then all of a sudden some other entity has that information. The Knowles campaign and the Republican form didn't ever go to them first. It came straight to us. So my first concern is Senator Guest worked very hard on a piece of legislation, Senate Bill 284 last year, to protect confidentiality, and all of a sudden it all went out the door because it went to a party first. I believe Annette Kreitzer, the Lieutenant Governor's Chief of Staff, is on the line as well. But the Lieutenant Governor wrote a letter to the Chairman of the Democratic Party asking questions about, how long were these in your possession? What did you do with the information? That was separate from the Division of Elections. But he, too, had similar concerns about, I believe the political term is caging voters. You're taking their information and keeping track of it. But that's an accusation. I mean, I don't know that was what was going on, but that's what you get fearful of when you see that it doesn't come to the state first. It goes to another entity.
In your experience in the election process, is this the first time that you've seen this sort of aberrational?
Senator Huggins, because you wouldn't know, and everybody else here knows, this is my first 2 years as the division director, but this is the first time the division has seen this, the first time a separate entity took on absentee applications, I believe, was the Republican Party in 2002. I think that was the year that occurred. That was the first time that had ever been done. Oftentimes, we have candidates come in, parties, who want voter registration forms, who want absentee ballot forms, and they take them with them to the fair, to door-to-door. to see that happen as well, but never in a mass mailing, and no one had ever seen in record that it had been mailed to another source other than the Division of Elections.
I'm assuming that your concern and your staff's concern was that potentially voters could be disenfranchised and all the hullabaloo that goes along with that based on the criticality and potential close races that we might have. Is that accurate?
Actually, our staff doesn't think like that. They are more concerned that they can't get a ballot to you fast enough, and they're concerned about the confidentiality of the record. They don't, seriously, if it means somebody gets ahead or behind, we don't care. But what we care about is that went open face through the mail, and all your information is on there, your signature's on there. It can be copied. I'm not even worried about the party. Who else, you know, where else did it go that somebody gets a full-on copy with your signature and a piece of information like that? Just so you know, I was talking to Senator Terry when he was asking me questions earlier. The Division of Elections, prior to my joining the division, being appointed to the director's job, when you used to fill out an absentee ballot envelope, it used to have a place where you signed it and a witness signed it, and that was all wide open out for everybody when you mailed your ballot back. And the division designed a secrecy flap that went over that. So even, I mean, prior to my joining the division, you know, they have always been concerned about protecting that information. So it's secret when you return an envelope to us with your ballot inside.
Did you get many queries from voters concerned about them not being able to vote based on this process?
No. While we didn't make a big political splash, you know, from the divisions, we tried to answer questions. We did a press release. We did a press conference. But we didn't generate, I was very conscious of generating fear. I mean, you get people frightened that they're not, I don't believe in that either. So, you know, we just worked harder to get them processed. But, I mean, we could have done the, if you filled out one of these forms, you're in trouble. That wasn't what we did. We just, you know, we dealt with it. There were people that called, is the ADP one of your offices? That was one of, we didn't know how to answer that because we didn't know what was out there. So, you know, we had some people calling the regional office, what's an ADP, is that your Anchorage office? There were those kind of calls at the beginning, but not concern on that level.
I assume you agree that there needs to be some clarification and some specifics so that we don't have a recurrence of what we had this last time.
Certainly, Senator Terrio's bill, the governor's bill, those things that say, you know, pre-approved by the division, mailed directly to the division. You know, that the regional supervisors raised the issue with me yesterday. That happens with registrars. There are entities other than parties that gather voter registration and keep copies of the registration forms. Do we as a state want to protect those records? Because when you come in for registrar training, you're told not to, but there's no state law that prevents that. And we've had people tell us that, oh, yeah, we've kept so-and-so's voter registration application on file in our office. Do we want to look at protecting that additionally? I don't know.
Laura, I saw these forms, of course, when it became an issue, but until you just said and pointed out that the phone number email was contained in the block that says you must complete this section, that's not a requirement of state law. I didn't catch that before.
And the reason that the phone and email, I'm answering a question you're not asking, why it is on our phone, on our form, we, right now, our database doesn't even trap that unless you've filled on a voter registration form that you want to be an election worker. And so we maintain that in a separate database, but we don't even, we keep that on there anticipating always that we're going to get an update to our voter registration system, which, as you know, we're going out to bid to do that this year in 2005. But right now, we don't even capture that information. If somebody called us for a phone number, the only way we would have it is if you were on our poll worker or election worker database in the regional offices. But our database on your voter record, if you were to pull it up, in the database. That information is not there. It is microfiched, however.
Clearly, the only reason to put that on there, information that you don't require sent in a ballot, is the person that caught the ballot intermediary wanted that information. I mean, that's pretty
you
clear.
You could say that, but I possibly couldn't possibly say that.
Okay, are there further questions? Senator Elton?
A few questions, Mr. Chair. And Laura, first of all, I want to express appreciation to your division. I know that I had some communications, and I think some of your employees were very, very quick to respond to concerns that some of my constituents had about being able to vote by absentee. So thank you. I'm a little bit concerned that in the way this has been talked about, not necessarily by you but by others, is that something illegal happened. And it would is it fair to say nothing illegal happened, but in fact there were miscommunications, mechanical issues that have complicated your job and have complicated perhaps confused some Alaskans who would have wanted to vote, but nothing illegal happened in this last election.
Well, Senator Allen, you're right, because I don't know, and again, Annette's on the phone to talk about the Lieutenant Governor's correspondence with the Chairman of the Democratic Party. I can't speak to what they did, and I can't speak to it being illegal. No, that's not really very nice to say. The reason that you have a bill before you is to make it very clear in law. So if you say it's illegal, obviously that language is missing from law. Not being an attorney, I don't want to speak to whether that was illegal. It had never been done before. And our law, without a piece of legislation, either the governor's bill or Senator Terrio's bill, you know, it's clearly stated, you know, only to the Division of Elections.
The next question, Mr. Chair, is, I mean, this is obviously one approach. The governor has this approach plus, if I understood the chair's characterization of it. I mean, but there are other approaches, aren't there? Can't we just simply say that an absentee ballot request has to be the official state form, or maybe one step less than that, and just say that the director has to approve any absentee ballot request form? I mean, there are other ways of doing this that may be less intrusive to party function, because we know at least two of the parties have kind of glommed on to the issue of making sure that the right voters get absentee ballot requests defined any way they want to do that. I mean, we don't necessarily need to go this far, do we, to get to some of the mechanical issues that you've talked about?
I believe it's a policy call of the legislature, but certainly I'd still like to speak with all my heart about confidentiality. I was there for Senator Guest on protecting voter confidentiality, and when it goes to another entity other than the state, you're releasing that voter's confidentiality to another entity. It's your policy call. So I can't speak to you, but from the director of the Division of Elections and many employees that have served more years than I will serve, that is their major concern, is that voter information is protected. And so that's what I could say to the bill.
To follow up on that point, I mean, one of the ways to get around that is to let people know this is going to be data that is collected by X and remitted to the Division of Elections. I mean, a kind of a consumer notification rather than a ban.
Again, I believe it's a policy call of the legislature.
The other question is maybe more for the chair than it is for Laura. I'm curious as to what the definition, I mean, the bill is quite specific. A political group or political party may not encourage or assist in violation of this subsection. I mean, how are we defining political group? I mean, is that the Juneau Chamber of Commerce, trustees for Alaska, retired public employees? I mean, what is a political group?
Senator, we can certainly check. I'm not sure if this section of the statutes, quite often there are definition sections at the end, whether that includes one, or you could easily refer to an area, make a reference, should we go with this language, add a reference to a specific section.
I think that we probably, I know it's not your intent to move this bill forward, but I mean, I think we need to have an answer on what that definition before we do move it, because it may, we may need to add a definition of it.
Senator Wagner.
Well, yeah, and this following discussion by Senator Elton, it may be, I would think it would make sense, a political group would be defined as any group that's registered with APOC. That pretty well takes care of any political group or subgroup or committee.
Do you have a response?
Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry, you asked me questions yesterday, and I know that this is distracting when somebody comes later, but the thing that the governor's bill, the way it was addressed was in Section A of the statute of 1520.081, you are alleged amended Section B, but Subsection A, the governor's bill says the voter must submit the application directly to the Division of Elections. That's kind of a different avenue, gets to the same, doesn't have to define political group or political party, and just says, you know, the voter submits it directly to the Division of Elections. I think the reason why, when you ask whether it's illegal or not, current state law says a qualified voter may apply by mail or electronic transmission to the director for an absentee ballot. So when you ask, did somebody break the law, it doesn't say directly to the director. And yet, again, not being an attorney, I think that for years everybody thought it was just coming straight to the division by that interpretation of law. And until this election cycle did we see that we would like that more clearly defined.
Laura, how about the advice from the AG's office? And I know that they said, don't disenfranchise the voter, process these forms. But the issue of the augmentation of information, the pasting over of information with the labels, it was apparently done by somebody other than the person that had filled out the form.
Mm-hmm.
What did the Department of Law advise you as far as, was that a violation of regulation or anything of that nature?
I am reading from the opinion that was dated October 14th that says, you have asked whether a third party may submit such applications to the division on behalf of voters. It gets from statute. Alaska statutes do not expressly authorize a third party to submit an absentee by mail application on behalf of a voter. To do so would create serious public policy concerns. And then it talks about the third party, and that the postcard format of the applications make the applications more vulnerable to alteration and leaves the voters' confidential information in view, potentially revealing private information to third parties. You have asked whether a third party may add or change information supplied by voters on the forms, as was done with the stickers. Under AS 1520.081B, an absentee by mail application also serves as a voter registration application. The voter registration statutes require that registration applications contain an attestation by the voter that the information submitted is true, and a certification that the applicant understands he or she can be prosecuted for a false statement. That's 1507060. The voter registration statutes contemplate that a voter who registers by mail will provide the information required by 1507060 directly to the Division of Elections or a voter registration agency unless the voter is incapacitated.
So clearly, if the person fills out the form, signs the form attesting to the data that's contained, and the data is changed somewhere then in the system. The statute didn't anticipate that, but can certainly be read that that's not allowed.
Okay.
It just points out again that this intermediate stop is just fraught with all kinds of potential problems. So, are there any further questions? Senator Huggins.
Just, if I could, Ms. Clay, to the... At the end of this election cycle, as I recall, there was a recount in the state senatorial, right?
Correct.
What was the degree of variance in the, what was the margin of victory? Was it within the variance or outside?
If you're asking, related to the recount. Are you looking at the governor's bill? Is that why you're asking about the recount?
Yes, exactly.
So are you, I'm sorry that I need to clarify. Are you saying state law currently in a recount, the state will pay for a recount if the variance is smaller than 0.5%? No, it was greater than that, but another party, a candidate, can request a recount, and that's what occurred. The variance was, I hope I'm answering your question, over 9,000 votes, and I'm sorry I don't have that memorized.
No,
I don't have the data with me.
What, I guess what I'm thinking of is, in fact, what we have is appears to be an escalating mentality of questioning the results of the voters' intent, and which results in recounts. And in this case, there was a recount, but it was outside, but said, we want a recount. And so it cost a person that asked for that how much money?
Currently under state law, $10,000 for a statewide recount, $750 for a district.
Who asked for that recount?
It was a group of, I might not get their names right, Concerned Citizens for Alaskans, for Alaska. Joe Sonneman headed up the group. There was a professor in Fairbanks, I think, that might have started it. It was basically a Fairbanks and Juneau group of citizens. They're not, I don't know who all entered or where the money went because it's not APOC.
Did that cost the state anything to do that recount?
Yes, sir. If you're on finance, you'll see me requesting a supplemental. It's probably not all the money, not all the numbers are in it. It cost us about $39,000 to do that. To date, 39,000. We, Senator Elton's constituents, we had about 60 to 70 Juneau residents come in and run the machines and run the ballots and conduct hand counts to re-verify the numbers.
Elton?
Yeah, I think this is going to be a difficult question for us to address on, you know, how much we charge back. I mean... One of the things that I'm good about at the end of that recount is that the people who had requested it said of the election process here in Alaska that they were very confident after having gone through that process that everything was done well. And that may be worth more than $39,000 to send that kind of a signal back to all of the voters. But one additional question, Mr. Chair, if I can. Has anybody taken a look at how other jurisdictions handle the issue of absentee ballot requests and what some of the solutions in other jurisdictions might be?
Senator Elton, through the chair, we have I'm not very good about leaving my post to go to other meetings, but I did just attend a meeting in Washington, D.C., and a lot of the states they were more overwhelmed through the voter registration process than the absentee ballot process. And I don't know, the honest answer is I don't know how many do a joint, meaning voter registration with absentee ballot application. They were more distraught about voter registration drives, concern for fraud, concern for the phrase caging the voters, who's got the data, who doesn't. There weren't very many state officials that I spoke to that had the concern, that had a state law that protect the confidentiality of the voter. So in some ways, we have an additional protection for our voters that other states don't. So it might not be an apples-to-apples comparison.
And just finally, I know that you're not going to move this, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate you're wanting to consider some of what you've heard. I think what struck me about this election is something the chair has already referred to. I think it was Jeremy, it was Laura, about the astounding number of absentee ballot requests, the astounding number of people who voted absentee, coupled with the fact that voter turnout was larger than it's ever been in the state of Alaska. And so I think while a lot of people share the concerns of the chair and the prime sponsor of this bill, I think what we want to do is we want to look for a solution that doesn't diminish the ability to get absentee ballot requests out there, that doesn't diminish or make put an additional threshold in front of a voter so that they can participate, because I think one of the lessons of this last election is that a lot of people did vote, and I attribute that, you know, to a lot of the party building voter activization that happened prior to this, getting absentee ballot request forms out to people and some of the other stuff. And so whatever solution, I agree with you, I don't think anybody is unconcerned about voter confidentiality. But whatever solution we come up with ought not put a threshold up that would depress absentee voting in the future.
No, and we do have our state, you know, our voters are very fortunate for the avenues available to them. They can vote by mail. We extended, the Lieutenant Governor worked with then-Senator Lincoln on special advance ballots for rural Alaskans. That probably attributed to the great increase in special advance ballots this year, in addition to our men and women serving overseas in the military. Special advance ballots. We had cases where we'd send a special advance ballot out to one of Alaska's voters, two servicemen in the Indian Ocean, and you know, I could still remember hearing his voice breaking up, but he got his special advance ballot and voted it. Then he got his official absentee ballot, but his friend got neither. We don't know why. I mean, we checked ours, we mailed it out, we don't know why. We let the other serviceman, fill out the other application, the other ballot, and mail it in with his information, so both voters got to vote. But we have by mail, special advance, by fax, incredible amount of by fax. I don't have the percentage, but it's blow your doors off that we had by fax voting this year. Special needs voting. If you need somebody to carry a ballot to you, we're all about helping you get that ballot to a person who can't get out. I mean, this state, not because of my direction, but the laws that you provide, you know, we have a lot of access for early voting, incredible amount of early voting in our regional offices this year. We plan to extend that in 06. So there are a lot. The Help America Vote Act allows a military person or uniform overseas voter to, when they fill out one application, it's good for two election cycles. So, I mean, they're a great deal of efforts out there to help a voter vote in the state of Alaska.
I would suspect that from your nationwide organizations, many states can probably look to Alaska on how to run the system to encourage participation. But the particular happening this year is not something that we would certainly want to export anywhere. So we need to take steps to close that loophole.
To protect the voters and encourage the participation would be the best thing I think we could do.
Senator Huggins?
Yes. Mr. Chair, I'm remiss, Ms. Glazer, not passing on to you comments of my son, who's a sophomore at the University of Nebraska. And he had a little difficulty with his absentee ballot, but he said he called your office and talked to some of your staff and says, Dad, you know, I don't know what those people do, but they do it quickly and they do it right. And he got to vote. And he was giving my wife the hardest time you can imagine about, he was concerned about jeopardizing his super voter status. And so pass that on to your staff. He was very thankful.
I think they're listening, and they'll be very grateful because they did work very, very hard. I mean, they were trying to figure out, okay, if you called from the East Coast, how early do I have to get in there in the morning to make the connecting call and then overseas?
It was very complimentary.
Thank you.
Senator Elton, just to respond to one of your questions, Title 15 does have a general description that says, you know, unless otherwise specified in the chapter, it defaults to the description of political party or political group. So if we decide to
chapter 15.
Should be is it definition?
1560.010. And then it's sub 22 and 23.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any further questions for Ms. Glazer? Seeing none, we do have Annette Kreitzer with the Lieutenant Governor's office on the line. Annette, are you on at this time?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I am.
Have you listened to the discussion so far?
I have.
Okay. I'd like to have just a... I know that your office engaged in a little back and forth with correspondence with the Alaska Democratic Party about the request that they sent out and their interactions and having the ballots or the request sent to their P.O. box first. I was wondering if you could just go over how things transpired. And then in addition, Ms. Glazer has used the term caging the voters, which is a new term to me.
It does.
And I'm just wondering, is that just the gleaning of information? Is that, or is it is that something that has more meaning to you than it does for me?
Well, for the record, Annette Kreitzer, I'm Chief of Staff to Lieutenant Governor Lauren Lehman. Laura's done a really good job of describing what has happened, and I'm not sure where that phrase originated, but that's how I interpreted it. I haven't had that conversation with Lieutenant Governor. That's a personal understanding that I came to after looking at, I did go down to the division to Laura's office to see what she was talking about and to see what these looked like. And the Lieutenant Governor, as you well know, having served with him, most of you, he spent a lot of time trying to protect voters' privacy rights. We've on lots of legislation that we worked on. And so when you see that a group is asking for something that isn't required by state law, and in fact, the division director and I have had a couple of conversations where folks that work in her division would like to have more information, but it's not required by federal law, and so the Lieutenant Governor's made a policy call to not allow them to request that information that when they gather information. When the Lieutenant Governor was advised of what was happening, he sent a letter to the head of the Democratic Party on October the 8th, and he did cite the statute that Laura alluded to earlier, 1520.081, a qualified voter may apply by mail or by electronic transmission to the director for an absentee ballot. And his take on it was that after speaking with the Department of Law, that the activity was not consistent with the text or the spirit of that provision of the law. And, of course, as a former legislator and as one of you who had run for office a number of times, that was his understanding of what that statute meant and his interpretation of that, and again, in consultation with the Department of Law. He had a couple of concerns that he outlined to the Democratic Party that all of the applications be delivered promptly to the Division of Elections for processing. Ms. Glazer told you what our concerns were. We were very concerned about a time gap between the time when the Democratic Party received these applications and then when they got delivered to the division for processing, and also the privacy of the application itself, the fact that it was cardstock and able to be viewed by anybody, and also, as the Democratic Party told us in their final letter, when they answered the questions that the Lieutenant Governor asked them, they said, Scott Sterling replied that when he was asked, did anyone other than the voter apply stickers with voters' addresses and in some instances precinct numbers to the applications after they were signed by the voter and mailed? That's a question Lieutenant Governor asked of Scott Sterling, who said, who replied in writing, when applications were returned for those that lacked residence addresses, that information was provided by the Democratic Party without otherwise altering any portion of the application completed by the voter. So that troubled us, troubled the division, because as Laura explained, those are also voter registration forms as well, and the voter has signed, notarized, not notarized, but attested that everything on that form is true, and then you have someone adding information after they've attested to the truthfulness of the application. So we were concerned about that. We were also concerned, Lieutenant Governor Lehman was concerned, that no voter be disenfranchised, even though we knew that it was going to cause a great amount of work for the division. We just saw no way to turn these applications back to people and say, please correct them. We went ahead and had the division just personally contact, as Laura has described to you, that process, each of these voters to get the correct information so they could get their ballot in time.
Okay. Was there, and once you made the contact, you quickly set up a process by which you had state personnel accompany an individual from the party to the P.O. box every day to make sure that the ballots were turned over immediately. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. You know, we pondered how to do this without trying to embarrass the Democratic Party or, you know, anything like that. And but yet still, if our concern is that the division gets these right away, the only way we felt that that could be accomplished would be if a Division of Election employee actually went to the post office with a member of the Democratic Party and received from them at that time the applications that were in the mailbox. And the Democratic Party agreed to that. They wanted to kind of think about it for a little bit, and then they wrote back and said that they would agree with that approach.
Okay. And do you have any idea from the date that the cardstock was first made out or mailed out or made available to the date that you got to that system of immediate transfer, how many requests came in? What data was collected, and what was data used for? Did you get any information with regard to that?
Mr. Chairman, the Lieutenant Governor asked a series of questions. He asked how much time had elapsed between the time the party picked up the postcards and delivered them to the division. And Mr. Sterling's answer, I need to look at the date of this letter, October 13th, this is the final letter that he sent to the Lieutenant Governor, because by then, I don't remember the exact date that we started this process. I would imagine it was probably the 9th or 10th of October. I don't have a calendar in front of me. It would have been the Monday, I think. Laura can nod her agreement. Or it was the Monday following October the 8th, I believe is the first day we started. But anyway, he says in this October 13th letter that the postcards about a week expired before the first absentee ballot requests were turned in. And I'm not sure how many were in that first batch that were turned in to the division. And then he says they were turned in as we received them. But then in the same letter, he says we applied stickers where there was no residence address. So it's clear that they were there for, you know, maybe however long it takes to look up an address and print out a label and put it on the application. So I can't tell you, you know, batch-wise how many were delayed.
Okay, but did you get any response to questions about were they photocopied? Was data entered off the cards into a database?
Mr. Chairman, we did not get answers from the party on that point, and the Lieutenant Governor, once we had a system in place and it was plain that likely that legislation was going to have to be introduced to deal with the situation, he did not press that issue with the Democratic Party about what they did with the information or whether they made copies, and they chose to not answer us. We could have gotten into a nice round of, you know, press conferences, and we chose to not do that.
Is it possible for the committee to get copies of the correspondence and went back and forth?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I will get those to your staff by tomorrow.
Thank you. Further questions? Seeing none, Laura, did you have
the only
comment?
Thing that I failed to mention, and as Annette raised the residence and the sticker, one of the concerns that we have and why there's the counter and why the AG's opinion referenced back to the voter registration form and that the voter attest is that I don't, what if that residence address, what if the database that generated those stickers for the Alaska Democratic Party wasn't the proper residence address? See, that's one of the big flags for us, and I'm sorry I didn't mention that earlier, but when you apply that sticker, it isn't just that you changed a form, and it isn't just that the voter had signed prior to the fact that you changed it, but what if you, the responsible party, and I don't mean political, the responsible entity, had the wrong information? You've applied that as the residence address, but all of you have been candidates. You've worked voter lists. You know the whatever database you have, our state is mobile. Our voters are mobile. That was our concern, was that the residence address was applied, and what was their, where did they gather that address? It didn't come from the voter.
Senator Elton.
Just an observation, Mr. Chair, that, and then a question. I mean, my guess is, and I don't know this, but my guess is that the voter address was from your database, the Division of Elections database. I mean, and I understand that people move around, but the question is, I guess, I mean, I appreciate the concern. I think it's a valid concern, but has any voter complained about the stickers having been affixed to the ballot, the absentee ballot request form? I mean, has this been a problem? I appreciated the way the division handled this and just said we're not going to get in the way of voter voting. I mean, I would assume that whoever applied the stickers said we're facilitating getting this person to vote also. Has any voter complained about what happened?
Senator Elton, through the
Senator
chair,
Howard,
I
the
don't
voter,
think
no.
they knew. And we didn't make a big public, that was the lieutenant governor, the Division of Elections. We didn't get into a political exchange about who's better and who's not and accusations and back and forth. So I don't know that the voters knew. And when the division sent the letter out, priority, and then inviting them to either contact us, we didn't say, ooh, the bad Democratic Party applied a sticker. And now, so I don't think the voter knew that it occurred. That wasn't our driving force. Our driving force was get that voter the ballot. Let's get the thing. So when you said, did they know, first of all, it was applied after the voter got it. We did not make a big public display. So I think it would be hard-pressed to know whether the voters were upset or not. We processed them. We moved to get them the ballot.
And I think the way that you handled this, the Lieutenant Governor's office, and the press of the election was absolutely appropriate. But now if you were to track every one of those down and ask the individual Alaskan after signing, I certify under penalty of perjury that the above information that I provided is correct. That somebody changed that after the fact. Would they have cause to be upset? Perhaps. Would some of them be upset? I guarantee it. Whether it really materially changed whether they were going to get a ballot or not, they probably wouldn't be too happy.
We'd have heard from them if they knew we took punitive action and didn't process them. And then told them later it's because somebody put a sticker on it, but we chose not to deal with the voters that way. So we didn't, you don't get that exchange. They want their ballot.
Senator Huggins?
Mr. Chair, when I saw that there was this bill, the question came to me was, why are we doing this? And I got to tell you, after listening to what you said and described, this is disturbing, and I mean, I understand why we got the bill. Now we need to take action on this and have some specificity because this is wrong. It can't happen again, and it's unfair to voters. And it frightens me and it concerns me for our country that we have this growing skepticism in some areas about the country and this contesting of results. And here we have evidence of how we can nip it in the bud. Good for us. We need to get on with it, but it clearly needs to be fixed in this state.
Laura, a question I have here with regards to the timing on when you saw the date that person signed and put a date on it, entered it into the process somehow. Were there groups of them that looked like they were delayed longer than others? Was there anything that you could discern, or you were just processing so fast?
Senator Terrio, the lieutenant governor, wanted to know the same thing. As a manager, and you all can hold me accountable for this, I decided that if we took time to do that, we weren't processing. I pulled the stickered that I did have an employee pull, all the stickered, altered, anything that looked odd that might have been, again, you have range aides who are working 16, 18-hour days, but even they can see things that aren't right. They set them aside. Managers made decisions on, picked up the phone. A lot of those had phone numbers on them, called the voter. Can we fix this? This is odd. This isn't right. Did somebody help you? There's nothing wrong with somebody a person filling out most of that and the voter signing it. That's no different than a party generating a pre-printed. So we didn't pull that, nor did we tally those things that weren't, that didn't seem right. I mean, I didn't pull them. I didn't pull how many looked like the date had elapsed. I mean, the point was I decided I was going to take personal responsibility. I could have said, I could have taken it to the press and said, the party's messing me up. My time's delayed. I got too many people in my office. I can't get this done. Or I could choose that you all could hold me accountable at the end, and I could work my tail off, and our people could work their tail off, and we could process as many as we could. Mm-hmm. And that was the decision, and I had the full support of the Lieutenant Governor that while all of that would have made for great excuses and defenses at the end, it would have slowed down our process and I think hurt the voters.
Do you still have possession of all of those?
Oh, yes, sir.
The other thing is you...
They're filed alphabetically. I know we had somebody filing them, but I think they're alphabetically filed and we'll keep them for a time. I don't know whether that's required by archives. You know, their ballots are required. We're required to keep ballots for a certain time. And I don't know what our archiving requirements are, but I do know they're still in our office.
And then you also mentioned something about prepaid envelopes, registrar envelopes. Initially, stuff was showing up in prepaid. I didn't quite follow what that was.
Because the Democrat, and again, it was, and I'm sorry, it's just, I consider it like a football team. This is the one football team that's up, but because it was the only one that it went somewhere else. Because this was mailed to the party first, the way the party at first chose to deliver them to the division was, as many of you may know if you're registrars, the division provides prepaid envelopes to the regional offices so that you can mail your registration forms in, and that's to expedite the time and return for registration forms. We were getting these in prepaid envelopes from the party. We didn't complain, again, take it, but I want to talk about why that slowed us down, too. I did not prepare. I mean, I'm not making an excuse. I'm going to separate. I appreciate that you asked the question about the 58,000 and how many returned. This is not an excuse. This is a fact. If this went prepaid to the party, and even if the party did nothing but put it in a postage-paid envelope, and then it went to my regional office in Anchorage, we are required to accept that in the regional office. We do. It's date-stamped, and then it's DHL to the director's office. You have to see that there are at least 3 to 5 days difference between if nothing happened. I'm not even talking about how long this took from the voter to the ADP. I've got 3 to 5 days right there that I have absolutely no control over how to make that process go any faster. And as a manager, that was really frustrating. It's more frustrating when you take voting as seriously as I do, and I have employees that, you know, were really upset that they couldn't do enough.
Any further questions from committee members? The list of things that I've got here to consider, you know, we've got the issue of whether there should be penalty. We've got the issue of the confidentiality. If parties are to be allowed, or anybody be allowed to send something out, should it be done in such a fashion that the voter's confidential information is concealed somehow? There's the issue that you brought up about a cutoff date for application. Right now it's 7 days. You've asked for consideration by the committee of 10 days, and that's contained in the governor's bill. There's the issue of whether we should just go to a pre-approval. Nothing goes out with pre-approval. And that could be pre-approval of the form, which could include that it has to have, can only include the Division of Elections as a return.
Right. I mean that it's protected, that it's a fold over and mailed back to the division. I mean that could be part, and that could be laid out in regulation. And you all, you know, would see that. I mean, you'd go out.
Approval could be type size, shaded areas. It could be glossiness of paper.
I mean,
there are a number of things. I wouldn't have thought about the type of paper as far as data entry. You know, does it shine? Does the light shine on it or not? And then there's another issue, the separation, possible separation of the voter's registration from the absentee ballot. Is that a requirement of federal law?
I don't believe it's federal, Senator. I'd have to check. But currently our state law says an absentee ballot application acts as a voter registration form. So we've treated it. You'll see the similarity in font between a state voter registration form and a state, and I'm sorry, I didn't bring the voter registration forms. They're very similar, and that's the reason.
But if somebody came to the Division of Elections to register to vote, they wouldn't get a surprise absentee ballot in the mail.
That's correct.
But what happened this year is a number of voters did get that and then called you and said, what's this all about?
But again, if it's a pre-approved form, and I'm sorry that I have to just pick a party because I'm not saying one's better than another, but I am saying this form is better. The Republican Party form says State of Alaska absentee by mail application. I will tell you that, you know, when I first came to the division, people were trying to think of the proper phrase to say out loud, upset, disgruntled, that at the time in 2002 the Republican Party used the phrase State of Alaska form. Because it isn't our form, it's their form for us. But the Knowles campaign, the same. I mean, the point is, I'm not going to nitpick about this phrase, but I would like the division to be able to choose the things that enhance data entry, accuracy, flow into the database. Our databases are set up a particular way. These are, we were just looking at the updated to the new voter registration form, and somebody caught that, you know, really on our database, six is before five. I mean, that's how much work goes into developing these to ensure accuracy, and that's what I would like to see. It's not, I'm not being a control freak. I think it's what makes the process better.
Are there further issues that the committee think of that come up that we as a body might want to consider, Senator Elder?
And just something that, and maybe I just misunderstood, but could I infer from your remarks that given the statutory language that people apply to the director of the board, that you could, by regulation, adopt the prescription or the recipe on what the request form looked like, including maybe glare on cardstock, that you could do that without statutory authority?
Senator Elton, through the chair, what you're asking is, under current state law, could the division put forth regulations that do that?
That covered the concerns that we've heard here, including confidentiality and including the kind of information that's requested.
The kind of information that's requested is in regulation now, and it is laid out. I mean, it says in law that you have to have the residence, and it wasn't on the Democratic mailer.
Maybe I should even put that in on the flip side, what kind of information can't be requested.
I'm sorry that I'm not an attorney, and I don't know. Where I come from, statute is supreme and then regulation, and I have tried with the division to have everything in statute and regulation not be completely separate from statute. Right now, statute says by mail to the director of the Division of Elections, and we've never had any activity like this. If it's the policymakers say go do it in regulation, I guess that the executive branch has something to say about that too, about whether in fact it should be a change to statute first, enhanced with regulation, more specifics made in regulation. If you want to talk about glares, font, and everything, but I think pre-approved by the Division of Elections, we saw that until this year, everything was going fine. When other entities chose to do drives, when other entities took a state form to the fair, everything was working fine. This is the first year where, you know, the flags went up and something needs to be done differently.
Okay, any other questions? Well, it would be my intent to have this bill back and forth, hopefully for final action, not next week, but following. I unfortunately have the number of days next week, so that's going to cause us to default to the next week for further action. So with that, we will adjourn for the day.